Hey everybody, this is Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols, and we are doing the Tactical Fitness Report. This time, this is part six of a series that we created a few weeks ago, talking about all the different body types and athletic histories of people going to SEAL training. And this one specifically is the lacrosse player, rugby player, and soccer player. We're going to group all three of those together. I know they're not all the same sport, but they're similar, mainly in the amount of running that they do in a workout or in a game. But they all have some good strengths, and they have some definite weaknesses too. But for the most part, you know, I'd say that this group does pretty well at SEAL training.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably because those three sports now are becoming a little bit more commonplace nationwide.
Yeah.
I think certainly soccer has, lacrosse is growing. Out here, out east, it's definitely got a pretty good stronghold in some of these regions or these areas. And then rugby, that's still kind of, I think you tend to find that more like as a club sport at university. You're starting to see some of the youth stuff, but.
Yeah, it's Olympic sport now.
It is, yeah. Yep. I mean, it's huge in Europe and, yeah. And like in Australia and New Zealand and stuff like that. I mean, it's a culture in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Because of the All Blacks. So it's growing.
Well, I will say this. One of the best things I did, I think, was not fulfill a initial desire to play college football. You know, when I went to Navy and I played 3.5 years of rugby. And that was a good transition for me from going from powerlifting football player to a guy who still lifted but ran a lot more, you know, and got in better cardiovascular shape. And then it also helped that about 8 guys on our rugby team all went to Buds in, you know, 3 years in a row. And, you know, you had guys to work out with that, you know, were a year ahead of you that were kind of your mentors, so to speak. So yeah. For me, I mean, I think that was a good way to open my eyes on what needed to be done and how much I needed to up my game to be prepared for, you know, the next challenge that I was going to have to go through. And I'll say, you know, I have not seen many lacrosse players not make it through SEAL training. You know, coming from Maryland, there's a lot of lacrosse players there that want to be SEALs, and they are usually pretty damn tough. Let's start off with the mental toughness side, you know, some of the intangibles that you see that these three kind of bring to the table.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing on the you know the mental side is, well, a couple of things. They're all team sports.
Yeah.
So that definitely favors that culture a little bit. And also, as far as like we kind of talked about with the cross country runner, where they've got to get in their head a little bit with all that running. This is an extreme of interval running, interval sprints like a basketball player, but this is a much more of an extreme because of the distance they cover. You can't be successful at any of those three sports unless you're not only good at running a great distance, but you're able to stop very quickly, change direction, all that sort of stuff. So that, like on the mental side, I know I'm talking about the physical, but if you can't get yourself physically prepared for those sports, the mind is just gonna shut down.
Yeah,
I think that's a big component for me is just their willingness to be fatigued and still perform at a high level.
Yeah, and if you think about the you know the more advanced kind of functional fitness testing that's going on with the military, we pulled that 300-yard shuttle run from these sports.
Yeah,
I mean these three specific sports do this as part of their preseason testing. You know, for decades.
Very, very commonplace.
Yeah, doing that 3, 6, 50-yard runs and then do it again. You know, that's part of your other one. The other one that they'll tend to do is the mile run, just as fast as you can. And pretty much you won't make the team, even in like a – almost like a, you know, recreational club team, if it's pretty good, you won't make the team if you're running over a 6-minute mile.
Yeah,
you know, for many of these, and maybe not rugby, but definitely the soccer and the lacrosse.
Yeah, they you know, and that's the thing too is you'll see, especially in lacrosse and rugby, some larger guys.
Yeah.
You'll see smaller guys, of course, as well, but that's the punishment that they'll take in those two sports is fairly robust. So you tend to end up getting some larger guys.
Yeah. Yeah, they're getting a lot bigger now. I was watching a rugby game at Navy the other day, and I was like, man, I'm glad I'm not playing now, because those guys are a lot bigger and faster than when I was there.
Yep.
These days.
Yeah, they're growing, and I think that's there is becoming this acceptance or this realization, albeit slow, that you can be a large individual, have great endurance, have speed, have power, all those sort of things, because there is still that stereotype that big guys can't move, but that's just because people don't know. I mean, if you've ever spent any time on an NFL sideline, right?
Yeah. They're
huge dudes, and they are super fast.
Yeah.
Right. So, and that's the case. You see that, especially in lacrosse and rugby.
You mean you're not going to lose all your gains if you start running?
No, that's the, yeah. Like today's been one of those days where I'm just trying to start those questions to the best I can, but
yeah,
I mean, I get it. There is some cultural sort of question marks as to when someone says big, they immediately think bodybuilder.
Yes.
And certainly the bodybuilder in the traditional sense probably isn't going to do so well at Buds, but that's not the reality, right? Because again, right. I said, someone was worried about that the other day, that, you know, they didn't want to put on, they were like 147 and they didn't want to put any more weight on because they didn't want to get big and bulky. Because they figured it was going to slow them down. Usain Bolt weighs 219 pounds.
Yeah, he's not slow.
No, so let's stop worrying about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what you see with soccer players, and soccer, lacrosse, and rugby is they are quick. Again, we think of speed as this long distance linear piece. But when we're talking about agility and quickness and power, right, that's confined and played out very eloquently in these three sports.
Yeah, yeah, very good point. Very good point. It's a good hybrid running, you know, sport. You know, all three of them. They're not running as much as a cross-country runner. They're not lifting as much as the football player, but they're in the middle.
You know,
in the middle of those two worlds. They're almost kind of like the wrestler. You know, if you look at the wrestler, where the wrestler just needs to be better at swimming, you know, they're pretty much bringing a lot of things to the table that as long as they're good at swimming, they're going to be pretty good. Now, I will say this, talk about some of the mental. Soccer players need to quit faking injury.
Yeah, the feigning. Yeah, it's so.
That's driving me nuts.
Yeah, you know, I see there being a problem in that sport when it has a term called feigning. And that to me is, I'll be honest with you, that's why I can't watch soccer.
Yeah, it's brutal.
That's why brutal I refuse, to watch. Honestly, let my son play it. Ain't happening, man.
Yeah.
No way. So I don't want to be part of that. And again, that sucks because the athletics is, and there's thing too, kind of Stu and I are talking about just briefly off camera, was that the world of soccer that the United States sees is black, we'll call it. But the reality of soccer in Europe and places where soccer is paramount is a totally different, it's white.
Yeah.
It's a totally different sport. It's a totally different approach to the sport, from financial all the way to sports science. Like it's probably the highest invested sport on the planet as far as sports science,
right,
except for in the United States.
Right.
It's basically like 10th.
Yeah. And right. They lift more over there too.
Oh yeah. A ton. Yeah.
Whereas American guys just run and they look like cross country runners with big legs.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to, you know, some of the bigger soccer guys overseas.
For sure.
So, which is odd to see, because usually Americans are just bigger
Americans. Not our soccer players though.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like on the mental side, I think. Then, you know, let's just stay to the positive again. So the positive physicality, we kind of already touched on it, but you know, I'll say this is because one of the greatest things that those three sports give to an athlete, in my opinion, from standpoint of physiology, is what we're really trying to get through volume training. And that's injury resistance and fatigue resistance. Because of all the dynamic deceleration, i.e. the change of direction, the slowing down, the speeding up that happens so much in those three sports, you get a tremendous amount of quality leg strength and endurance and power in those three sports. And that for me is probably my favorite thing about those three sports, is because you, not that there's not knee injuries and such from, you know, soccer and the shins and like running each other, but I'm talking like no one's touching you and you're changing direction.
Right.
There's very few injuries in those three sports due to that.
Huh.
And it's because they that's what we do. Again, look at tennis players. When's the last time you saw someone in Wimbledon or the French Open or the US Open wearing a knee brace?
Yeah.
Very, very rare, if ever.
Right.
Is because they spend their entire career changing direction dynamically.
Yeah.
So those knees and those ankles and those hips in the lower back tends to do pretty darn good.
Yeah, that's nice, because yeah, they do have a foundation of, I guess we can call it foundation of, yeah, dynamic deceleration, acceleration, injury prevention, I guess we could call it that. Now there are some injuries obviously that occur in those sports, and
for sure,
you know, but they're typically traumatic injuries versus you know those that we
talk about. Yeah. So the difference, again, we talk about agility, right? We a lot of times you say, oh, there's this agility ladder. But it's really a footwork drill. So the difference between agility and footwork, agility is where your entire body mass changes direction.
Right.
Footwork is just, you know, your you know, those ladder drills we see with feet, that's not agility. That's footwork drills.
Right.
So now you can add a component of agility to those ladders, but primarily it's footwork drill. And so if you look at these three sports, it's agility 101, all these sports are. And it's even backwards. Like the defenders are in the same, kind of see that in hockey too. The defenders are spending a lot of time backpedaling.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'd say out of the three, lacrosse players have a little bit more advantage in the hand-eye coordination world, obviously, because that takes a lot. And they tend to be, I shouldn't say everybody on the field, but a majority of the people on the field are, for a second, the quarterback on the team. If you're holding that ball for a split second, you have a leadership role. You have, you know, maybe you're setting up a play because it's you that has the ball at that time, and you have to rely on your teammates to communicate. And, you know, so there's some definitely, you know, in all sports, all three sports have those things. But, you know, that's a very big intangible as well of
those three sports.
Yeah, being able to communicate. You know, be a leader on the spot, because, you know, think about the job that they're preparing for. I mean, those things go hand in hand with those. And it's a good way to build that type of, if you're wondering how to build leadership, you know, athletics is a great way to get you to do that, you know, and then you're applying it to a highly physical, stressful situation. Once again, those skills transfer very well into the military setting.
I think probably we could kind of go down these like singularity of positives, and I think the next biggest one is, you know, a lot of guys in a lot of sports prepping for buds encounter at some point some pretty uncomfortable shin splints.
Yeah.
You don't typically find that with these three athletes because of because of their tendon and ligament strength, their leg power.
Yeah. Now they will start off that way with shin splints. They may have suffered shin splints when they were younger.
For sure.
And getting started, but as they are growing, they are pretty much resistant to shin splints after say 18 years old. That's another reason why we recommend taking a little bit of time and not being 18 and going to buds, being a little bit older, because you quit growing eventually and those shin splints tend to be less. Cause where do you tend to grow? You know, your bones are going to grow. Those muscle fibers are going to stretch, you know, and they tend to hurt down there, especially lower extremity.
Yeah. Yeah. They're good with ground force.
Yes.
And that's where shin splints are coming from. And it's nice because all three of those sports, you know, the footwear is improved, but the ground, the grass typically they're playing on is in fairly good condition. Yeah. So you get a lot of power production on a fairly stable surface that's actually fairly forgiving as well. So that's one of the beauties of those three sports, transitioning to training different volumes and intensities, preparing for buds as well.
Yeah, let's talk about the physical side. Let's how their sports kind of prepares them for the PST or not, right? Yeah. So some of the things that I have seen many of these guys have to work on, obviously more calisthenics, you know, they need to add, especially the soccer player, may need to add some more calisthenics to their day. The running, they typically all three do really well on the mile and a half run. It's if I see a either one of these guys score much higher than a 9 mile or a 9 minute mile and a half, it's rare. Yep. Most of these guys are breaking nine pretty easily.
For sure.
And then the swim is just going to depend. It's going to depend on if they, in the off season, they grew up near a pool or they maybe played or was on a swim team or something, or can pick up swimming pretty quickly because they're just naturally good athletes and can watch a couple videos and then go in and duplicate it. But yeah, as long as they do those three, you know, the PST getting to the training is not going to be that difficult for these guys. They tend to grow pretty well into the PST, for lack of a better term, better prepared athlete.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a common thread that exists even in these three sports. And the common thread is they either can swim or they can't.
Yeah.
And that's kind of one of the drawbacks also if these athletes aren't super, super confident or capable in the water. Swimming becomes a difficulty. It just varies. I think probably of these three sports, the one, you know, the physical side, soccers tend to lend themselves to be far, far more upper body weak than a rugby player and even a lacrosse player. And again, that's kind of why I mentioned the whole European difference, is that there is a real like the world's largest youth soccer club is Rush. It's called Rush, and they're here. It's huge. And I've spent a lot of time kind of with those athletes, and there is a real resistance to get them to train in the off season. Because of the fear of the parents and the organization to slow them down. And that's just not the reality of it. And so I think that's kind of a national concern as well.
Yeah.
But that's just because, well, the big thing for here is that they want them playing all year round. If they're playing all year round, then they don't have time to do an off-season resistance training. But, it is what it is. With any of these athletes, kind of, we talked about the cross country athlete, because they have such a good aerobic base, getting them stronger in a fairly short period of time relative to their body weight, or closing that gap between their quality of running and their strengths, their physical strength, upper body strength and so forth, it's pretty easy to shorten that gap for these three athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. And some teams actually do, you know, a great deal of calisthenics during their workouts. Maybe it's not their part of their season yet, but maybe it's part of their off season. They will do a lot of, I see them, you know, practicing push-ups and sit-ups, and, you know, some even use pull-ups, you know, squats, lunges, running bleachers. You know, they're always running, so they're going to have a great running base. That's never going to be a problem. And typically load bearing for them is not a problem.
No.
If they act in, they start lifting. I shouldn't say load bearing isn't a problem. On the legs, load bearing isn't a problem, but maybe on their core and upper body, it could be, especially for the soccer player, if that guy's not lifting that much.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just kind of a byproduct of the sport, just because lacrosse is hitting people as is rugby. So you get a little bit of different the stimulus for the upper body is different. Not that there's not hand checking in soccer and some pushing and stuff, but it's not nearly the volume that you're going to encounter in a lacrosse game or a rugby game.
Yeah. And that's another intangible too. You know, you think about it, playing with pain, because you are always playing with pain, you know, with bumps and bruises and maybe even sprained ankles.
For sure. Know,
things like that. Soccer too.
Yeah. So, again, just, I guess, you know, you know, that we there's as far as the, I think really that's probably for me, I'm looking at the three sports, like the biggest negative is probably if they haven't swam. Right.
Yeah, or I would say that
they haven't been, but it's kind of universal. I just think that this one's easier to say. These athletes have more strengths than they do weaknesses, because we've kind of already covered. If you look at the last six videos we've done, the weaknesses all tend to be about the same.
Right.
Give or take.
Yeah.
So, because again, we're not, and it's no disrespect, we're not picking sports like badminton. We're not picking sports, like, I don't know what else to kind of pick on. I mean, we almost could lump into this too, gymnastics.
Yeah. Yeah, to a degree.
Maybe,
yeah.
But that also could fall in potentially in the same category as a wrestler.
Right.
Point is, it really kind of is individually driven how much you've been exposed to different sports.
Yeah, it does help to be a little more diverse than just a single sport athlete, because the more diversity you have, the better you're going to be prepared for the diversity that's required at sure. Buds. You know, that's a no-brainer. These three do pretty well with the O course.
Agreed.
You know, they're not super big people. Usually the agility and the footwork that they have, be able to maneuver those obstacles, typically good, as long as they have some good upper body and grip strength.
Yeah. And I think, because, like, you know, I look at, like, rugby, because of the scrum, they tend to do pretty well with logs and boats.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I buy that.
Also the obstacle course and those sort of things too. And then rucking, you tend to see that. The rugby guys do pretty good with the ruck on as well. But again, it's just, you know, I think it's agreeable that we lump these three guys together because they're living in an extended interval world.
Right.
Their running base is so similar in terms of their stop and go traffic that they encounter in their sport. That's really kind of, that's their unifying sort of, trait.
Yeah. I would say, yeah. Like that 300 meter shuttle run, that mile repeats. I mean, that's part of their living.
For sure. You know,
that's just where they hang out. And that's a hard test. You know, that's a hard challenge.
That's such an advantage. And that's where we look at, like, interval-based training, once you have a good aerobic base, is so valuable.
Right.
That's what I was saying. These three sports have manifested themselves into exactly that. You know what I mean? So,
They're getting bigger. People are getting bigger and still able to do these sports.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, so don't feel like lifting is going to slow you down. Yep. Lifting is going to make you an animal at these sports.
For sure.
Because you can actually be bigger just as fast as you were, maybe even faster, especially with your agility.
Yep.
And your ability to cut on a dime and accelerate, decelerate.
I would say that, I guess, this kind of not falls in the negative, but worth mentioning, because this is one of those common questions I get. And I get this a lot. This is almost universal, but I'm not sure that we've really brought this up. So I figure this would be a point where we could bring it up. So we'll just use these three examples, right? They're in season, and the tremendous amount of work volume and workload on these athletes. And then the questions I get, I'm sure Stu gets, is like, hey, should I be doing weight training in season? Should I also be swimming in season? And now here's the thing is, whether you're really being competitive in that sport or you even just really want to get better, we just got to make sure that if you're doing calisthenics or resistance training or swimming, whatever it is, that it's not, one is not taking away from the other.
Yeah.
Now, swimming is this really interesting thing where you can develop the skill for swimming, even if you're a terrible swimmer or learning to swim in season, as long as you're focused. Again, there's a difference between skill acquisition and just a ton of work.
Right.
Learning the stroke. It doesn't have to be, right? It doesn't have to be super intense. So when the season ends, you've been able to catapult yourself into a higher intensity of resistance training and swimming.
Right.
So just keep that in mind. And so I guess maybe I did deliver the answer, but if you're going to do any sport, and in these three instances specifically, because there is so much intensity in their running game, just be very careful that you're not like, hey, I'm weight training 5 days a week intensely and trying. I'm like, I don't, because the question is like, well, I'm doing all this work, but all the work that I'm putting in isn't giving this this value that I think should be there in terms of improvement. And that's because, you know, like any sport, but especially these three, because they're so intense in their running, you may not see a drastic improvement or improvement at all in your overall strength and capacity.
Right.
Because the sports are so demanding.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you know what? I tell people this all the time. You know, when you're in season, be a good team player. Don't be exhausted because you're doing Rambo workouts on your own to go to Bud's. Just focus on your sport, yep. Right? And if you need to do anything on your own, work on your technique.
Yeah, and something. So then the question goes, well, Stu, I'm doing four sports, and I'm a sophomore, a junior in high school, and then our response is going to be, well, that is why when you graduate high school, we're saying take a year.
Right. Right.
Because that foundation that athletics is giving you all is a far greater benefit than playing a sport year round or in reality is only doing resistance training year round.
Yeah.
Especially at those young ages where you're developing.
Yeah. It's priceless. I mean, some of these sports will have a pretty intense preseason, maybe even postseason training as well. So maybe that is where you get your lifting in, especially rugby, lacrosse world. Yes. They're going to be doing that. They may be doing their intervals and things like that, but they're not playing rugby or lacrosse at the time. You know, they're not doing any sport-specific skills. They're just doing foundation building, which, I mean, that is the same stuff that you need to do to prepare for Bud's. So for sure. Be a good athlete and don't burn yourself out by doing – morning runs and morning workouts, and then you're not doing well in the afternoons when the rest of your team is there, you know, trying to, and then, you know, that doesn't do you very well in the coach's eyes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I would say, like, for me, my best advice I can give athletes that are in season is make sure you're eating adequately and you're sleeping adequately, because then the season, the trauma and stress that sport puts on you, you can get stronger, faster, more powerful from that stress because you're not underslept and underfed.
Right.
Let that stress of that sport help develop you as a better athlete.
Yeah.
And you can only do that if you've eaten and slept.
Yeah. And don't forget, you're still studying. I'm sure you're taking classes because no one does this stuff as a job. Yeah. You know, you're in the middle of school, either high school or college, and either trying to get into college. So that requires some work
for sure,
you know, and staying in college requires work. So anyway, so all that is stressful. And if you're not eating right or sleeping well, you will see negative results, not only on PST stuff that you're also training on top of your training, but also your actual sports that you got recruited for. So,
for sure.
Let's see. So we talked about teamwork. All these are pretty solid, obviously, with the teamworks. Negative feedback. I would say all these sports, you know, have good coaches that are, you know, telling them what they're doing wrong constantly.
Yeah.
You know, that's the beauty of this, you know. So when you actually get out to SEAL training, you're going to be told you are, you know, weak and stupid and you're the worst student ever. And you have to be able to roll with that, you know, and let it roll off the back and just come back stronger the next day. So yeah,
for sure. And I think, I know this is maybe a small thing, but it's also regional. Now, if you're playing like in upstate New York and Canada, you can play some professional lacrosse and you're going to have a ton of people in the audience. But if you're playing lacrosse, even down here, it's kind of an overlooked sport. So you really got to be there because you love it. Especially rugby here in the United States.
Yeah.
You better love rugby if you're going to play rugby here in the U.S. because, you know, when the All Blacks played the United States last year at Soldier Field, barely anybody really showed up.
That's crazy. And they sell it out.
Like
they sell
in relation it out. To the stadium, you know what I mean? You're going to get 100,000 people to a college football game. You're going to get 15,000 people to watch Team USA play the most successful sports franchise in history. That's the All Blacks. They have the winningest, they have the highest winning percentage of any team or sports team in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
And they didn't sell it out at all.
Wow.
So again, that's just one of those things where you got to love it. Now, soccer has grown pretty robustly here in the United States. However, it's still being the season that it's in gets overshadowed by the likes of football and basketball and yeah. such stuff. So again, soccer, you find this, and that's kind of one of the positives. These three sports, you tend to find people that really enjoy the sports. You know, yeah. you're going to find people that are like, well, I'm going out for football because, you know, it's kind of the thing to do and it's a social kind of, but here in the United States, and so I think that I count that as kind of a positive.
I would say so. Yeah. You got some passion behind you.
Yep.
You know, and you need that.
And it's not to say that people yeah. don't love baseball and football and those sort of things too, but there's far less patting on the back like there is in the United States with football, going, you're the best thing ever.
Right.
Like, there aren't many people that are getting patted on the back here in the United States for playing rugby.
Yeah, if you're getting recruited by an SEC college football team, you're probably yeah. the man in your hometown.
yeah, sure. yeah. So I think I look at that and kind of – but see, that's – I guess really what we're saying, though, is, again, one of those unifying factors across the board regardless of sport, when you find an athlete that truly loves that sport, that passion can transfer into – military service, and it's, and again, it's not that you can't develop that. I mean, there's plenty of people that don't love sport but love sure. military service.
Yeah, absolutely. But
there tends to be guys that like had a passion for something, and then they find the military service and they have a passion for it, and it just transfers yeah. into, you know, I mean, again, I so like same mine was baseball and came in the Navy, and I just take that same passion and to do what I do now. I
yep.
just hand that passion off.
Absolutely. Maybe next time we can discuss the non-sport
yep.
Athlete. Yep. Well, you know, they do something. They're doing something after school.
For sure.
Maybe
we might even go. We'll do with that. And I think we're going to do that. We do the one that's, you know, the athlete that was training with me all last week. He, very young age, was a very like Olympic caliber like half pipe skier.
No, oh, yeah.
You know, skier cross, and then you have snowboarders, and you have
BMX.
Kind of, yeah, you have the kind of the extreme athletes.
Yeah, there skateboarders, you go.
So those are the next two we're going to do. We're not sure which one, but those are interesting sort of outlier sports for sure. And yeah. then again, some, like kind of the same thing as someone like rock climbing, but you have someone that really didn't grow up playing formal sports. They in themselves are an outlier, and I won't kind of spoil – we won't spoil it for you, but
right.
there's some really interesting intangibles that exist with those individuals as well.
Absolutely. Surfers, rock climbers, yeah. all those guys. Yeah. Maybe we'll do the rower too. Got to do yeah. the rowing athlete because they're at Buds a lot.
That's serious, so, man. Yeah, the crew is serious.
Yeah.
So, Stu, you got the stupid question of the – of the. I told you the other day I had the stupid question of the year. What was it?
I don't know. I like going on your YouTube channel and reading some of yours.
Oh, my God.
Because that makes me yeah. feel better that I'm not getting asked it. But the ones, you know, about your beard, they wanted you to do a video about your beard. That was lovely.
That was serious.
But, you know, I think we came up with a new category for stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
This one, you know, because it was a good question. It was a good question yep. when it started, but the follow-up question and comments just took it off the trail, off yep. the rail.
So just, I guess, let's preface it with our pet peeve, or really it's mine.
Yeah.
One of my biggest pet peeves is somebody that does this. They come to Stu and I and they go, hey, what do you think about this? And Stu and I give them, like, and it starts off as a good question. You're like, oh, yeah. it's awesome. So you yeah. respond, or I respond, and then the follow-up is this. I know what I'm doing, but, and then they give you an excuse, and you go, okay, well, yeah, but this and this, and he goes, yeah, I'm, you know, I really know what I'm doing in that world, but I just really want to know this. They always want to be told what they want to hear.
Right.
And they always have an excuse.
Yeah. Right? And here's the problem, you know, and I get this not so often, but every now and then, especially from people who wash out of certain training programs. And believe me, there are good people who wash out of special ops training programs, whether they were injured, they just weren't prepared like they thought they were. They're good people, but they just didn't meet the standard for some reason. They quit or they got injured. You know, these things yep. happen. So you know, if you're going to a program, let's say, you know, Special Forces, right? And you don't make it through, and let's change it to recon, because this also had a swimming component in there. So, you know, recon's pretty tough. I mean, because you got to mix it all together. You got to ruck a lot. You got to swim. You got to swim with fins.
They do their treading is in camis, and their swim is in camis too.
Yeah. Yeah. They do a big swim with camis, which is tough to do. You got to practice that. You got to practice that. So anyway, it had to do with treading. And my answer for treading is you got to practice treading, right? It's not the same as swimming. Now you will see this. If you're a really good swimmer, treading is not a problem.
Yeah.
If I tell a really good swimmer to go swim for 10 minutes, you know, he's going to do 700 yards pretty easily, you know. But if I tell somebody to tread water for 10 minutes, you know, for that good swimmer, he goes, okay, no big deal. If I tell somebody who's an average swimmer to tread for 10 minutes, it's like I'm shooting him. Yeah. Like, oh, no way. Tread for 10 minutes with my hands out? No way. You know, but here's the problem, though. If you practice that, it becomes easier. And you got to work on your kick. Yeah. You got to kick, you know, especially with zero, with your hands out of the water. You know, there's no other way.
Is like the question how it was framed. You can frame it like, because his framing was, well, I've been to the training and washed out, so I really know what I need to work on. The other framing is this. It's like, hey, I washed out here, because this is how it started. I washed out here. How do I improve this aspect?
Right.
And then Stu and I both came at it with an answer. And then we both got a reason why our answers weren't good enough. So we both responded with another answer. And then we got another response as why that wasn't good enough. And then I just basically told him to go fuck himself. So if you don't want the answer, don't ask.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of where my day's been. Stu probably won't say that to you, but I will.
I mean, I will say this, that, you know, we get hundreds of questions a day. Many of we've seen before, and they're real easy. I can say, go read this, go watch this, you know, check this out. But there are some that are really good, and I like to, I like to answer them, because they give us feedback. They give us ideas for videos. They give me ideas for articles, you know, but then there's some that, you know, this is categorized as one of the follow-up comments and questions that, you know, can get rather annoying. You know, if you don't like our answer, just say, hey, thanks a lot. And that's all you need to say. You don't need to give me any excuses of why you're not going to listen to my answer. You know, because my answer is not going to change.
Right. And here's the thing is, like, it's not – here's the deal is – and that was the thing, too, that kind of threw me for a curveball. He's like, hey, I appreciate your opinion. And that's like saying you're a dipshit, but here's my reason. You know, so it's like, I'm not giving you my opinion. And Stu's not giving you his opinion. These are based on credible resources of experience and science-based, right? It's not like we're going, hey, well, like, I'm going to reach into this hat and pull out an option and go, well, maybe just fin more. Oh, maybe just swim better. Like, here's the deal. Michael Phelps doesn't need to fucking practice swimming or practice treading water.
Yeah.
Right?
You can tread all day.
I don't need to practice treading. Stu doesn't need to practice treading. Now, is it a component that you need to, if you, again, that's why I'm a big believer in saying, well, maybe we should experience it. Do I think a person needs to spend days and days and days and under a ruck or running in boots? No, but I do think you need to experience it.
Yeah.
So you go, wow, that really changed the way my approach needs to be, my training approach. And so you can't come at, again, I'm kind of getting on my soapbox, but we're giving you options that work.
Right.
We're not coming at you with like, well, my opinion is this. No, we're telling you what can work, what has worked. Because Stu's been doing this, for 18 years. Yeah. And so have I. I'm coming at you with the thousands of people that he and I have encountered collectively, and that it's worked every time, but we just sometimes got to tweak it for different people.
Yeah.
It's never, approaching it this way has never not worked. Right. Here's the thing too, is neither of us anymore are getting questions that have never been asked or never been thought of. Like, people come to us like there's a unique problem. We go, here, this is not a unique problem. This happens a lot. Yeah. Here's your solution. And people refuse to think that they can't be the only person, and they're special. Somehow their physiology is different.
Right.
And it's not.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's a good one. Hey, real quick though, my answer is this. You got to practice treading. Usually what we do is we'll warm up after a hard workout. We'll go jump in the pool, cool down. And I use that 10-minute transition to our swim workout and we just tread. You know, it's great, especially if you're running and rucking and you jump in the pool and now you're treading, you're using your hips, you're working your mobility in your hips. Yep. It is like instant relief from anything you just got through doing.
Yep.
So we use it as a recovery drill. So it just becomes another part of the workout. It's not this high anxiety event that, you know, gets in your head. Oh my God, I can't tread, you know. You have to frame that differently and make it part of your workout. You know, it's just another part of your workout.
And see, the point of all of it is that you have, it's purpose-driven training, right? And the purpose of that training isn't to just go, you need to practice it. Like you're going, hey, here is why we're practicing it. It's structured this. Like now, if you really have your hips like hurt doing the egg beater, yes, there's a reason, you know what I mean? That then we get to approach it a different way. Like I do the dolphin kick when I tread. That's just how I do it. That's why my kick is. Now
I call that drowning.
Right. And so now, but I
can't dolphin kick.
I don't like the egg beater. I don't like the egg beater. Yeah. I prefer doing a breaststroke or scissor style kick.
Yeah. Same. I'll go from scissor. I'll go a left foot scissor, right foot scissor, and just kind of like I'm jogging.
Yep.
And then I'll go into a egg beater and I'll go like 3 minutes each, 3 minutes each, just kind of loosen up, you know, work in both directions of my hips. And it's a great recovery tool for me. You know, but it's also teaching people how to tread. So
again, I think I have certainly killed that dead horse, but
it's all right.
I think that here's the thing is neither of us are trying to limit anybody in their training scope.
Right.
At all. And it may take a couple shots at getting the absolute concise answer, but understand that these issues that guys are encountering, men and women now, I have three female clients now. They're not unique.
Right.
And many, many people have solved these same issues. So it's exciting for us to go, hey man, we've had dozens of people tackle this problem and we're successful at it. And we're just sharing with you all those tactics, for lack of a better term, on how to solve those issues.
Right. And besides, go to YouTube and search it. You know, there are many, many people besides us that are treading water. You go watch a water polo guy do it. I mean, that's how I learned how to egg beater. I just watched water polo guys do their thing in their water and just, I said, oh, that's how it is. You know, and you just pick it up.
Yep.
You know,
and the reason also too why the egg beater is used, especially in that environment, is because if you have the cadence right, your head isn't bobbing in the water.
Right.
So that's the thing for me is like the rule doesn't say I have to keep my head out of the water completely. I just got to keep this out of the water.
Right.
And so for me is I'm not buoyant at all. Right. So that's why my kick has changed.
Yeah. That's a good point. And with fins, I mean, there's only a couple of ways to kick with a pair of fins on. You're either going to do little flutter kicks or you're going to do some dolphin kicks.
Yeah. Big flutter, small flutter, or dolphin.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what you're, unless you have the small fins, but then again, you're not going to have small dive fins.
Right.
In the selection program. So again, we don't mean to discourage you guys, especially me, because I know I turn a lot of people off because I'm an asshole, but it just, trying to get guys to be pretty critical thinkers about it. And I think that nobody does it better than Stu and I, in the sense of giving you the answer, what's best for you, like not what's best for us, because I know my approach to swimming, I know it can be kind of absolute, but when it comes to me teaching somebody, I teach them to the best of their capability. Not
right.
I have to put myself in their shoes.
Sure.
And I know that.
Yeah. Same here.
So we'll do this again, and it's the surprise is we're not quite sure which one we're going to do. We're probably do the non-athlete or the kind of
or the rower
athlete.
Yeah. Right, or the X game guy.
X game. Yeah, we
just got to call it the X game guy. Yeah.
X games athlete, the rower, or the non-athlete.
Right. We'll, there you go.
We're going to brainstorm a little bit and see if there's something a little bit similar to a rower. Maybe. Yeah. The big, because very few athletes have a superior posterior chain.
Right.
Rowers do.
Rock climbers got a pretty good. Too.
But again, that's.
And grip, too.
So that maybe, yeah, we'll bring, yeah. On off camera, we'll brainstorm about what to do. But that's a really interesting animal, that rower, man.
Yeah. Because
they've just got a big.
They're cardio animals, too. Yeah. Oh, my God.
So.
All right. Well, this was fun. So
we'll do it again.
Good luck if you're a lacrosse player, rugby player, soccer player. You know what you got to do.
Yep.
All right. Okay. We'll see you.
All right, Stu. Thanks.
Yep.